Hi, I'm Norm Shealy.
NormShealy.com.
You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and tonight I have with us Dr. Jonathan Stahn from SpectraCell Laboratories, and we're going to do a three-part segment this month, this week, next week, and the following week, about the three specific tests that SpectraCell does, one on micronutrients, one on telomeres testing, and one on cardiovascular lipids. So tonight we're going to talk with Dr. Stahn about micronutrient testing and nutrition. How are you, Dr. Stahn?
Oh, fine, Eva. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, man, thanks for coming on. You guys are doing fabulous work out there. So before we get started, telling us a little bit about you and SpectraCell and where we can find you.
Sure. Well, my name is Dr. Jonathan Stahn, and my background's in molecular genetics. I'm the director for science and research at SpectraCell Laboratories. We're based in Houston, Texas, but we are basically sort of a nutritional anti-aging cardiovascular testing laboratory, and we service everybody on the continent, basically. We're one of the only people doing what we do, and we're very, very excited about it. If you have any interest in sort of what we do, probably the easiest way to do it is to go to our webpage, which is www.spectracell.com.
SpectraCell.com, right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
One of the questions that I get a lot of times before we even get starting with all the specific nutrients is from doctors who say, what makes their testing so special? What makes their testing different from a regular blood test that you get at a doctor's office?
Sure, that's a great question. And I mean, you know, there's a lot of hurdles you have. You know, some people, getting people to realize nutrition is important is one thing, but when you get down to it, not all tests are the same test. A lot of tests do serum measurement, where they simply count the number of molecules of, say, vitamin B12 inside a cell or the amount that's floating around in your serum. And that's very different from what we do. We do functional intracellular testing. So we look at the patient's lymphocytes, you know, their immune system, and we ask the question, what nutrients for each individual, are there any specific micronutrients that will help the patient's immune system perform better?
And how do you know that?
Well,
how does it show up in that test?
Well, essentially what we do is Dr. Shive, who established this at the Biochemical Institute up at UT Austin, about 20 years ago now, develop the test. What we do is we take the patient's whole blood, we take their living cells, the component of it called the T lymphocytes, which is the patient's immune system, or a critical component of the patient's immune system, I should say, and we grow them on plates under two different conditions, essentially asking in the presence or absence of one specific nutrient that we're testing. Right? We grow the patient's cells, and we ask the question, well, if we grow them, say, for a week, in the presence or absence of any given nutrient, like, say, the presence or absence of, I don't know, zinc, did supplementing zinc to the cells help them grow better? As we all know, it's really important for your immune system to be able to rapidly proliferate in order to deal with inflammation or deal with immune responses, like infection or that sort of thing. And so if we can identify the ones for the individual that will make their system perform the best it possibly can, then we can devise strategies for, again, achieving sort of an optimal immune function. And the odds are pretty good if someone's, if your lymphocytes are, say, need zinc to work better, the odds are pretty good that that's systemic, that you may have a systemic zinc deficiency, for example.
Okay. Is that all that you're going to say about that before I go on to something else?
Well, let's see. Yeah, I guess one thing I think that's important to highlight out is that this is functional testing. Like, how well do the cells perform with each nutrient? And that, as it turns out, is very, very different. It's got a very, very different level of sensitivity than serum testing. And it also has a different time window. That, you know, the amount of time it takes for your cells to absorb nutrients and sequester them and utilize them for proliferation is very, very different from the amount of time, like, let's say you take a zinc pill and your gut absorbs it and it floats around in your bloodstream for a couple of days and then your body kind of gets rid of it. It's a very, very short window of time compared to functional testing.
Go ahead.
It's a days versus months kind of difference in looking at things.
And is it different, or what is the difference between intracellular levels, say, like for magnesium, and regular blood levels that you get at a normal physician's office? Is there a difference?
That's one of the disputes
that go on with me and some of my friends, and they don't understand it.
It's all the difference in the world. Like, you can have issues, for example, with cellular absorption, where your body simply doesn't absorb it into their cells very well. So you could have relatively high serum levels because it's not getting into your cells for a variety of different reasons, right? In which case, you would have very high serum levels and very low intracellular levels. And probably it's more important, though it's certainly important to maintain good serum levels, it's probably more important to see what your intracellular levels are doing because that's where your nutrients are being used. The serum is really a transport media.
So my friend says to me, Eva, if that's so important, why is every doctor out there not doing it?
That's a really good question. I think because of the state of sort of Western medical instructions, most medical schools are not really providing any in-depth understanding of nutrition. A lot of our clinicians who've decided that this is important, and they're sort of tired of prescribing medication to deal with symptoms, like they'd like to start curing some of the underlying issues associated with illness. Like, a lot of them have found that they need to self-educate on nutrition. They simply don't have a strong educational background in it. And if you think about the years and years and years of training most clinicians have to go through, and the sort of level of busyness of their lives and their practices, it's very hard for them to make time, even if they're motivated or properly incentivized, it's very hard for them to continue educating themselves on the subject. Like, there's a huge hurdle to that here.
Uh-huh. All right,
It's less true in Europe.
Sorry?
Mm-hmm. It's less true in Europe, where standard medical training includes a relatively thorough background in nutrition.
Yeah, one of my friends said to me one time, we get all these years of conventional medicine training, but we get 15 minutes in nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
All right, what I'd like to talk about, one of the first thing is magnesium, calcium, and taurine. Why are those mm-hmm. things so important, and why are so many people deficient, and why do so many people waste those things and not hold on to them?
Oh, that's amazingly important. It's a really good question. Yeah, calcium deficiency is extremely common. Magnesium deficiency is, again, about 25% of the population is functionally deficient in magnesium. And of course, they interact. Magnesium helps your body absorb calcium, and so you get into sort of these kind of vicious circles,
yeah.
Where one deficiency will lead to other ones. They're incredibly important. Obviously, calcium is important for bone strength, but it's also important in neurological function and mood. So it's certainly true that a lot of us are drinking caffeine. A lot of us are taking stimulants to get through our day, and all diuretics cause your body to lose minerals.
So let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. All the heart patients that their doctors say stop taking calcium, and
mm-hmm.
they start having leg cramps, they start taking all these pharmaceuticals, and they start having these awful leg pains. I have a friend that happens, and he's about to go
mm-hmm.
crazy
oh, sure.
with these leg pains. And you know that, you know, one mineral makes your heart contract, and one makes it relax. So if the doctors are telling their clients don't take any more calcium because you have kidney problems, what do they do? How do they know that they need to go and supplement those things, that that's one of the reasons their heart's dying?
Well, you know, it's a really good question. No one wakes up in the morning and says, you know, I really feel like I need some selenium today. I really feel like I need some calcium today. People go through their lives, and until it becomes a chronic deficiency that results in a disease, you know, until someone finds out they have osteoporosis, you know, your body won't really be able to tell you what it needs like that. We're simply not designed. You never know until you check. And that is one of the...
tell you that, right?
Exactly so. And that is one of the real important reasons why people need to get checked out. You know, if people felt like they were about to get a heart attack, Right? They do something about it, but people don't. People feel normal, and then something horrible happens. And so I think if you're interested in having a future, I think it really behooves everybody of a certain age to go see how they're doing, to get themselves tested.
And can they get this, do they have to have a physician prescribe it, or can they call in and you send them a kit?
People can order it online. I mean, like, we've got sales reps just about everywhere in the U.S., plus Canada, Mexico, Puerto Rico, and so forth. So, I mean, the webpage has, you can put in your zip code, and we'll tell you where the nearest clinician is who handles it.
Mm-hmm.
You can make arrangements to have your blood drawn. It's almost always better, though, to have someone, unless you have a strong nutrition background, it's almost always better to have a clinician walk you through the results and what they mean for you.
Okay, but you can go and get it and get your results in your hand and then take it to a physician. If your physician won't order it for you, you can take it.
Oh, absolutely. Though, again, I would caution, most physicians have relatively little training in nutrition.
Yes.
So that's going to be something, that's going to be problematic for some people.
My doctor wouldn't order it for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm scared of it. Anyway, what is the connection? Well, back to magnesium. Why do people not hold on? Why do people magnesium waste?
It's a really common deficiency. The most common reason for a magnesium deficiency, again, like with all minerals, most people are in one direction or another. You know, a lot of people live on caffeine, and caffeine causes you to lose it. The dietary sources for magnesium, nuts and whole grains and beans, like, not necessarily, fresh vegetables as well. Like, that's something not a lot of people are eating diets rich in the U.S., so that's very, very common. Cardiovascular disease is associated with magnesium deficiency, and cardiovascular disease is so common in the U.S.
Well, one of my questions, Jonathan, I probably, you don't know me, but I take more magnesium than anybody you know. I'm sure
mm-hmm.
I do.
Mm-hmm.
I take thousands of milligrams a day.
Mm-hmm.
And when my test came back, I mean, I use transdermal magnesium.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. I eat raw nuts, and I came back deficient in your test. I was flabbergasted. But it makes a lot of sense because of the way I feel when I, you know, put more on, or how I feel with these test results. It makes a lot of sense. Why am I not holding it? Could it be, does taurine help hold on to it? What helps it stay in your cell?
Well, you know, again, you know, the key thing on that, there's a couple of possibilities there. You know, like, knowing your particular situation, most commonly when people are supplementing, like, most of the time what you're looking at is poor gut absorption.
Okay.
And so what we suggest to people, I mean, you can get there's a phenomenon called competitive uptake inhibition, where essentially your body preferentially absorbs what it's good at absorbing, and it tends to pass the rest. If like everybody else on the planet, you take all of your supplements at the same time, you will occasionally get, in some individuals, situations where, again, the thing they really need the most is the thing their body is the poorest at uptake in. And so what we normally recommend for that is taking it separately. Taking it separately from everything else.
Another thing, we did, what I didn't say is you guys tested me, and I have my results, and I take more, like I said, I take more supplements than anybody you know. It's amazing. And I was both shocked and pleased in the results that I had, so it made me want to do something to help the other people. So one of the things that it made me ask you is, I take N-acetylcysteine every day of my life. Every day, 600 milligrams of it, and I'm short on it. So if I'm short on it, what is the rest of the world? How are you going to know if you don't test?
Oh, absolutely.
Go ahead.
It is astonishing how common most of these deficiencies are. Like, you never hear about a selenium deficiency. Like, it's not something that shows up in popular media. And a huge percentage of people we test have selenium deficiencies. About a quarter of the people we test have zinc or magnesium deficiencies. These are very, very common.
So what are some of the physiological symptoms that you're going to have if you're selenium deficient? In other words, why do people need to believe you? What will they be experiencing in their body if they have this?
Well, if you look at, like, if you don't believe me, you can look at sort of the CDC U.S. morbidity mortality data. People in the U.S. die of one of two things. The most common cause of death is cardiovascular disease or stroke, and the second most common is cancer. Selenium is a very, very important functional antioxidant. And so it's one of the sort of frontline protectors of the body from cancer. The way most people get it, the most common dietary source of selenium is getting it from vegetables that have been grown in selenium-rich soil. So intensively agricultured soil will not have selenium. So most people are not getting it. Most people don't eat vegetables, and most vegetables aren't grown in soil that is selenium-rich. And so the vast majority of people are not getting enough, and this is increasing their cancer risk.
So how do you supplement it?
Oh, it's easy. I mean, again, if provided that you need it, you know, provided that it's something that you're actually deficient in, like selenium is well absorbed and well tolerated. And so this is a classic example of if you check in and you do the legwork on it, it's relatively easy to take care of. But if you don't know you have it, you're putting yourself at increased risk.
I guess I should do this. Dr. Stein is not a medical doctor, and neither am I.
More your geneticist right here.
Yes, everything that we say on this show is for informational purposes only. Don't do anything because we say that it might help you without checking with your physician or your doctor. Okay.
I would hasten to add that like large amounts of minerals have toxicity effects. Like large amounts of oversupplementation can have deleterious effects. Really, you're almost always better off finding out what you need and taking care of it.
So let's talk about omega oils for just a minute.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference between 3, 6, and 9? What kind of symptoms would your body reflect if you had a deficiency, and how's the best way to get it? Do you take virage oil, olive oil, primrose oil, fish oil, flax oil? What do you take, and which one, and why?
Well, okay, that's a pretty broad question. The big one on omega-3s are really important. They're not prevalent in a standard American diet. The good sources for it are avocados and olive oil. So those are the big sources for oleic acid.
Okay, let me ask a question here then. With those oils, does it matter how they're processed, like cold pressed, or does it matter?
Well, I know cooking is going to break down some of them.
Uh-huh.
We normally recommend, either the oleic acid rich oils, so your olive oil, your canola oil, your avocado oil.
If you go and buy a bottle of olive oil, and it
do that.
Does it need to stay cold pressed? Does that matter?
Right. You want to avoid heating it because that's going to break down some of the omega-3s.
Okay, I gotcha.
Right. For most people, they're not really getting enough omega-3 in their diet. Our diets tend to be relatively rich in 6 and 9. The oleic, of course, is non-essential, but it's sort of upstream of those. So it may signal an overall deficiency in your omegas. And again, they're important for cardio health. They're important for mood.
Okay. What about primrose, flax, or fish? Why would you take one of those? Why would you choose those?
Well, again, flaxseed oil doesn't have a lot of oleic acid, but it's a really good source of your essentials.
Okay. What about primrose and fish oil? And
you
does
know,
it matter? Is it really a pharmaceutical grade that matters for the fish oil, or just kind of the drugstore?
You know, we tend to be relatively sanguine. Like at SpectraCell, we tend to be relatively sanguine. We don't sell any nutritional supplements. Like, we're not associated or affiliated with any particular one, due to the possibility of conflict of interest. But we tend to say, the best supplement is going to be the one that works for you. And so, that's sort of a process. You know, I think as sort of enlightened individuals who are trying to determine their own health, there's going to be a lot of self-education that goes into this process. I'm sure you're well aware of that.
Yeah, it's overwhelming sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, do you require... What about E-mixed tocopherols? Do you need that if you're going to take these omega oils?
Well, again, they're all going to interact in relatively, there's a lot of synergy with nutrients. So, mixed tocopherols, basically your vitamin E's. They may prove helpful for it. It's another source of oil, and it's got its own advantages. But
I don't think it's necessary. It's not necessary to take mixtecoferols. You may get an improved effect on it, but again, that's it's really when you get to the level of individual biochemistry, you'll find that there aren't a lot of generalities. We're also biochemically unique. That I tend to sort of refrain from sort of broad generalizations. It may be great for one person, it may not be for the other, and you'll never know till you check.
Okay. Now, what about the amino acids? I have a big interest in those. I don't know why, I'm just fascinated. Taurine, tyrosine, all of the things that support firing, you know, electrical firing in the brain and the heart. Can you talk about those a little bit?
Sure. Well, you know, for most individuals, I mean, you know, we our diets tend to be fairly rich in protein, right? And protein is the source of the essential amino acids that we get and need, right? Unless you're in a situation where you've got poor gut absorption, or you've got like hard draws, like if you're say a weight trainer where you're really trying to build a lot of muscle, right? In general, you know, people's amino acids. You know, in general, those deficiencies are not that terribly common, right? But again, if you've got issues where you've got poor gut absorption, you know, that they may come up. And again,
how do you
it's a classic.
If it's your gut, do you have symptoms of that, bloating or anything?
Well, we don't really test a lot of amino acids, so that's not something we cover in a whole lot of detail. But again, you know, the symptoms of a protein deficiency, you'll get listlessness, you'll get depression, like all of those things will sort of come with that. You know, most people, if they've got, say they've got Crohn's disease or they've got, some sort of digestive issue, normally your body will be pretty vocal about that.
So let me take you back to calcium and magnesium again. How do you find that balance between the two? Don't you have to have one to make the other one work? And how do you find that balance without that vicious cycle occurring all the time?
Yeah, they're absolutely synergistic. I mean, you're absolutely right. You know, and this gets back to another issue about serum testing. We know that your body, you know, it's so important to maintain a level of what's called homeostasis, where your body has relatively narrow ranges that it will tolerate well. It's so important to maintain a balanced level of calcium in your serum that your body will literally cannibalize your bones for calcium if you aren't getting enough in your diet. So this is another way in which functional testing might be important. Like, you may have a normal calcium level in your serum because it's getting stripped out of your bones.
That's very interesting. So how's the proper way to supplement it? Do you take it with magnesium or with vitamin D? I mean, how do you know which way to look?
Yeah, I mean, but for calcium particularly, like aside from, say, calcium carbonate, which is not very bioavailable, it's that's the one that's sort of crushed clamshells.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's very, very, very hard. Your body absorbs maybe 2% of what you're supplementing. Aside from that, you know, people who take sort of calcium with magnesium, there's a really, but I think it's an orange juice you can get that's got D, calcium, magnesium in it.
What form do you recommend? What's a good absorbable form? Or does form matter?
It's honestly going to be different for everybody. It really is. You know, you sort of have to find your balance. We tend to recommend getting your RDA. Like, that's, you know, if you look at all of our supplemental information as a testing facility, you know, we just sort of say if you get your RDA every day, you're going to be fine.
Do you think that's correct, the RDA?
That's an interesting question. I mean,
that kind of
some
thing,
clinicians,
they're so low.
Yeah, some clinicians are very aggressive about repleting, you know, and some individuals will, you know, again, they'll sort of assume that, well, those averages are based on the average American. The average American, again, is dying of cardiovascular disease or cancer. So, you know, is that really what we want to aim for? The issue there is that too much of a good thing is very, very rarely a good thing. You know, and that you have to find your own balance. And unfortunately, we're all individuals, and so there's not a lot of, you can't really paint with a broad brush on that.
Okay. So let's talk about my test results for a minute. Well, the results in general.
Mm-hmm.
With the reference range that you have where it says greater than.
Mm-hmm. Where that comes from.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to. Yeah, I get asked that a lot, and it's a really good question. You know, from where are these numbers derived? So here's where our cutoff values become. Here's how we determine if someone's deficient or if they're fine, or if they're not deficient, I should say. We took about 10,000 people, and we determined that, we grow their cells. We grow their cells in the presence or absence of, just say, zinc. So we feed the cells zinc or we're not supplementing the cells with zinc, and we see how well they grow. We look for significant changes in growth under those one of two conditions. And so what we did was we tested about 10,000 people, young people, old people, extremely healthy, extremely ill, men and women. It's a random population from this continent. And we asked the question, well, okay, what's an average test result? What's an average person's test result? And we determined that numerical value. And then we said, okay, well, with that population, what's the cutoff number for the bottom? We went one standard deviation below the mean, so we identified the bottom third of performers. All right, and we said, somewhat arbitrarily, the bottom third of performance is what we're going to identify as deficient.
Okay.
So all of those numbers for each different analyte, it's going to be slightly different because each analyte has a different effect on lymphocyte growth, which is what we're measuring. And so essentially for all of these, we're saying, you know, if you're deficient in them, you're in the bottom third level of performance of this large and essentially random population. You know, that said and done, you know, would you feel really better if you were in the, you know, if you were at the 34th percentile? Would you feel worse if you were at the 32nd percentile? It's a somewhat arbitrary cutoff. But we feel that, you know, this is sort of a reasonable metric for identifying deficiencies. And we've certainly heard from enough clinicians who use us to say, well, yeah, boy, when we find a deficiency, these, you know, people are deficient.
Okay. So I'm going to make some other questions just to help clarify for the people if they get one of these tests.
Oh, sure.
My B1, for example, says patient results percentage control.
Mm-hmm.
It says greater than 70% under the range. Mine's 100. So what does that mean to me?
Well, essentially, I mean, it's a fine score. And what it says is this is for your B1.
Mm-hmm.
So what this means is, so we took your cells and we either grew them in a media that had B1 in it or it didn't have B1 in it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, it's a chemically synthesized media. We make it in-house. We know everything that goes into it. We grew each you know, we took a small aliquot of your cells and we grew them in triplicate on these little plates. And we measured their growth under both conditions. And a 100 means essentially there was no difference in cell growth in the presence or absence of B1 in the media. So what that means is that your cells, like your lymphocytes, had enough B1 sequestered. You know, they had enough B1 inside them already in stores that they could utilize for growth.
Okay.
That there's simply no deficiency there.
Okay. And then if I have one that says, like, my oleic acids, it says the reference range needs to be greater than 65.
Mm-hmm.
And the patient results, my results happen to be 65. How much more than that 65%, because it says I'm deficient, how much more do I want it to be? I mean, is it based on the range, is it 0 to 1,000 or 0 to 100? I mean, how do I know what to do with this number?
Sure. Well, if the cutoff value is 65 and your score was 65, you're right on the edge of deficiency. And what that means is you're right at being at the bottom third, the bottom 33% of performance for our population. We'll have a page in your results that have graphs on them,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they show the population distribution, and they'll have your score in the context of that. And so you'd be right at the cutoff. So this gets sort of the clinician philosophy. I have clinicians who are very sanguine about it. They're like, well, you're right at the border, and you know everyone's gonna have sort of good, bad, and ugly periods of time they're going through. So you know you might want to retest in a couple of months and see how you're doing, right? Others of them, they were much more aggressive, and they'll say, well, you know, hold on, you know, like, again, if you assume that the average American is unhealthy, then being at the bottom third of performance in a relatively unhealthy population is not where you want to be, you know, like. they're sort of walking on the cliff, you know, so walking by the edge of the cliff. You don't want to fall over the cliff, sure, but you don't really want to be walking by the cliff either.
Okay, correct. Okay,
right?
Gotcha.
Right, you'd want to improve your performance. And again, some clinicians will very aggressively replete borderline results.
All right, let's talk about carbohydrate metabolism for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know I have some of those issues because I talked to Dr. Treep about it. I know I have some metabolic syndrome going on.
Okay.
This
sure.
Number says it needs the glucose-insulin interaction. It says it needs to be greater than 38. My results are 41.
Okay.
Glucose sensitivity says it needs to be greater than 34.
Mm-hmm.
Yours says, mine is 47. Chromium's 45, and you said it needs to be greater than 40. So my numbers are greater than those reference range numbers. So what is that telling me?
Right. Well, again, if you looked at what to say. So glucose insulin function, you know, about 1 in 6 people, a little more than 1 in 6 people are going to have some problems with this. You know, obviously our diets are very, very, very rich in simple carbohydrates. So it's not surprising that some people are going to have difficulties processing that.
So are
your results are fairly borderline.
They are
right.
And
I mean,
what do I do to fix? What does that tell me? How do I fix it? Stop eating sugar. I need to eat less sugar. Is that what those numbers tell me?
Yeah. What that's telling you is that again, you're not below the bottom third, we'd have flagged that as a deficiency. Like you're currently above the bottom third of performance, but you're somewhere near the borderline, right?
So I want those
again,
numbers to
most
be smaller or bigger? Bigger than
you would
20?
Want that to be bigger.
Okay.
Right. And so the way you would do that, you know, the you can address that. Again, you sort of got a borderline. Your chromium is again, it's, you know, the cutoff is 41 and your value was 44. So you're sort of near the borderline on that too. And chromium affects, one of the things chromium is important for is for good insulin function. So these all kind of feed into each other. Most people are, most processed food has a tremendous amount of high fructose corn syrup in it. Most people are eating a lot of simple carbs in the forms of snack foods and sugars, you know, sports drinks, sodas, and the like. And so, you know, they're relatively, while there's a lot of them, they're also relatively easy to avoid. We all know what's got sugar in it.
That's true. Okay, I want you to, next week we're going to talk about telomere testing. So I wouldn't mind if you would just tell people what they have to look forward to, and then I'm going to let you talk about what you want to talk about that we haven't talked about.
Okay, sure. That sounds great. Well, where to begin? So telomeres. They are long repetitive stretches of DNA on the ends of all of our chromosomes.
Like
a toothpaste
or something? Because I want people to understand.
Oh, sure. The analogy everybody uses is that they're kind of like the little plastic tips on the ends of your shoelaces.
Okay, gotcha.
That protect your shoelaces from unraveling.
Okay. And what does measuring those tell us?
Here's what's important about them. So every time your cells need to divide, they get a little bit shorter. Telomeres get a little bit shorter. And eventually, when the telomeres become too short, your cells will simply stop dividing. And this has some good effects and some bad effects. They think that the reason telomeres have this function is to protect your body from uncontrolled cellular proliferation. That is to say, it's an anti-cancer mechanism.
Interesting.
Right? But you also need cells to divide constantly to repair and replace your organs. Your vascular tissue is always getting worn away, your skin, the tissue in your gut, in your esophagus, all of your organs, they're being replaced all the time by repair cells, and so cells need to be able to divide. And when the vast majority of your cells can't divide anymore, when they're in a state called senescence, where essentially they're still alive, but they just sort of stop dividing until they expire, you're going to have very, very poor wound healing, you're going to have very, very poor tissue repair. And eventually, the maintenance on your vascular system, the maintenance on your cells, will start to break down. And so telomere length is sort of a measure of how rapidly you're going through replacement cells and how long you'll be able to continue to have good functioning on it. And it's very strongly correlated with heart attack and strokes.
How about your aging?
No big surprise.
So we're going to talk about that next weekend, so they have to tune back in to hear the answers.
Oh, cool.
One more question. I want to ask you about lecithin and choline. What can you tell me about that?
Okay.
And heart disease. And when? How do you, because Dr. Troop told me I should probably look into that. So, but then my one other friend said, oh, you don't take it with high fatty meals. What does it do, and when should you take it?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, one of the issues, again, with minerals is that high fatty diet, like fat tends to draw them out and through your system. And so fat will kind of block your absorption of a lot of minerals. Choline's important. It's important in heart stuff and you know, deficiencies, and it can result in arrhythmias and so forth. And so those are, And so they're important, if only for that. Again, cardiovascular disease is so common.
Do you take it with your meal, or after the meal, or before the meal? How do you do it?
We tend to recommend taking them separately.
Okay.
But if at all possible, of course, if you're using a lot of different supplements, it's not like you're going to live with your wife on an hour timer. You know, people have real lives, and so that sort of makes it challenging in some cases. But you can, again, you can test and identify the ones that you're having trouble absorbing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you'll know, okay, well, these are the ones you need to focus on. These are the ones that you need to take separately from everything else. And that'll be helpful overall for your absorption.
Does it matter, like, say, if you have a big fatty, if you know you're going to have a fatty steak tonight? Do you take the lecithin before you do the steak or after you do the steak? I mean, will it make fats flow, I mean, fill up your bloodstream, basically?
Yeah, I mean, ideally you want it beforehand, right? If it's got any protective effect, you know, before the fat results in inflammation of your arterial system. And trust me, Jen can go into this in as much detail as you ever want. So.
Sorry, this is so fascinating. Okay, now you get to talk about what you want to talk about, and we have about 15 to 18 minutes.
Oh, fantastic. Well, where to begin? You know, again, there are a couple things that I'd really like to emphasize for your listeners. I mean, obviously, if they're listening to the show, they're getting educated, they're excited about their health, they're trying to figure out how to live healthier and with longer, healthier lives, right? So I think the important thing I would point out is balance. You'll have a lot of people, again, you know, too much minerals can cause illness, not enough minerals can cause illness. Too much fat in your diet can cause illness, not enough fat in your diet can cause interest. You know, you'll hear all the time about, you know, nutrition can be terribly fattish where, you know, there's, you know, all of a sudden vitamin D is the most important thing. Oh, no, wait, maybe it's omega-3s, maybe it's something else. And I would caution people against kind of falling into those kinds of fads.
Yeah, it seems like it's whoever you're talking to, whatever their expertise is, that's the most important thing.
Exactly.
You know, so you got to be careful. That's one thing I like about my show. I interview experts in everything, so I get to hear everybody's piece of expertise so I can put them together. You know, it helps. Magnesium here, amino acids there, vitamin C here, vitamin D3 here. And it helps to put all the pieces together.
Absolutely. And you'll get that kind of ascertainment bias. You know, obviously, when I was giving my doctoral thesis, it was on some very complicated technology. And I've been studying it for so long, so hard, that I assumed everybody knew as much as I did about it.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was very, very central to my life, but I guarantee you a lot of people can get through a lot of days without knowing very much about subtractive hybridization. So I'll tell you, it's just a component, right? Everybody knows the essentials to living well, right? You know,
I really don't know that people know that.
I'm not sure. I mean, you know, I mean, there's your food pyramid. There's eating well and in moderation and exercising. Right.
They get sick though. They run to the pharmaceutical, and I'm sorry, but not one time has anybody ever said, "Eva, you have a deficiency of Wellbutrin in your system." Never.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Never.
Yeah, no one is caffeine deficient.
Exactly.
For example. Yeah, that's very, very true. I mean, you'll find, I mean, again, the system seems to be set up now, or rather the state of Western medicine is such that for most people, they're getting processed by overworked people. The solutions tend to be pharmaceutical, and they tend to address symptoms and not the underlying cause of the conditions.
So I have another question here.
Mm-hmm.
Are you there?
This test,
when it measures B3, it said niacinamide in parentheses. Does that mean you found niacinamide in there? Or because there's different forms of B3, or what does that mean? Why does it have niacinamide in parentheses?
Well, what we're saying is that's the specific form of B3 we were testing.
Oh, okay.
Right. In just the same way that when we test, say, vitamin E, we're not testing mixed tocopherols.
Okay.
We're testing alpha tocopherol, and the reason for that is if we were testing mixed, we wouldn't know which particular one you were deficient in.
All right. Another question. People that have triglyceride problems take niacin for it, but if you take niacin and it gives you a headache, say, what is that telling you? Does that mean you don't need it? Does it mean you're allergic, or is that just something it does?
There are different forms, what you're talking about is called a niacin flush.
Not the flush, just the headache.
Well, again, if you take large amounts, there are different forms of niacin, niacinamide, and so forth. And some forms will cause some individuals poor reactions to it. Right? And so, again, in just the same way, you can get calcium carbonate, you can get calcium CalMag, you can get calcium citrate. Like, they come in lots of different forms. And it's just one of those things you're going to have to check on yourself. And see if you're having an adverse reaction to it.
But I don't think every form works for triglycerides, does it? I mean, is the fact that you have a bad, because I was taking niacinamide, I'm using me as an example here, and I never had headaches. And then I saw these results, and I went, uh-oh, that's not working. And I was taking 1,500 a day, to 3,000 a day probably. I went, uh-oh, that's not working, so that form must not be good.
It might also be your dosage.
Lower the dosage? Does it work at a lower dosage?
You'll get partial effects, but if you are very sensitive to it, right?
Is it an allergic reaction that's going on? Is that what's happening? Because a lot of people say that to me, I can't take that, I get a headache. Is that what that means?
I haven't really studied it in a lot of detail.
Okay.
But I know that for some people, some clinical regimens for it involve ramping.
Okay.
So you might take 500 a day for the first week or two, and slowly ramp your way up, and you build tolerance to it, as opposed to you'll get a system shock, right? Usually headaches from that are from vasodilation, but I'm not 100%.
That's what I wanted to know.
I'm not 100% sure on it.
That makes sense to me. Okay, that makes sense to me. All right, I'm sorry. Now, what else did you want to talk about? I rudely interrupted you.
No, absolutely. No, I'm enjoying this conversation immensely, by the way. I hope our listeners are, too.
I think it's great. I mean, you know so much, Jonathan. And you're such a young guy to know so much. It's just interesting.
I had some very good teachers, and boy, there's no limit to the amount. Once you start getting into nutrition, you'll see last year there were 15,000 papers on it, for example. So it really is, there's simply no end to how much you can educate yourself, which as a scholar is kind of exciting, but for, a person with a wife and a family and real-world responsibilities, I can see how people can become very overwhelmed by the information out there.
And so a lot of the initial groundbreakers, Abram Hoffer died the other day. He did all the niacin stuff and the vitamin C stuff with Lionel Paulding. And David Hawkins that did that, he's 96 or 7, something like that. I'm so glad to see young people following in their footsteps and taking it to the next level. So what about homocysteine? What can you tell us about that? What does that tell us, and what is it, and what do we do to address that or support it?
Yeah, homocysteine is interesting. Again, you know, these are all nutrients that have a large component associated with cardiovascular disease health. So that's the really important thing about it. A real issue, particularly with homocysteines, is that cysteines can be associated with increased risk of cardiovascular disease. You know, there are bad forms and good forms. You know, again, when you have people take N-acetylcysteine. Excuse me for a second. You're really wanting them, you know, you're really going to, you may want to supplement with other nutrients to drive the sort of the biochemistry of your body in a more healthy direction. Again, you can get bad forms of it, and it can result in increased risk of a heart attack or a stroke.
So did you say that taking N-acetylcysteine can raise the homocysteine levels? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you want to make sure you've got enough B12, you've got enough magnesium, like all of those pathways. Again, all of these biochemical pathways have cofactors, you know, enzymatic cofactors that rely on other micronutrients to perform well. And so that's something you kind of, if you're taking forms of cysteine, that's something you kind of want to be aware of. And again, it's one of those reasons why. Let's say you read about it on the internet or you hear about it from a friend, and all of a sudden you're popping large amounts, say, of a single nutrient.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you may be, if you're deficient in some of the supporting nutrients that are very, very important for the proper synthesis of, you know, the processes you're trying to assist, you can deal with serious effects of it. There was a study, a couple years ago, about how vitamin E increased morbidity and mortality in kind of a meta study, but that study involved people taking vitamin E and nothing else. Right? They were taking large amounts of E, but E interacts with vitamin A, vitamin C, selenium. Right? All of the antioxidants, all of the major antioxidants, they trade, you know, like part of the process of getting free radicals out of your body sort of involves them almost like a basketball team, like kind of trading the free radical back and forth as they get it out of your system. And if you have large amounts of one and small amounts of another, you can create an imbalance.
That's one reason this test is so fabulous. You list everything out there and you graph it, so there's not really, I have to admit it's a little bit overwhelming bit of information when you do all of them at one time, but you break it down well. So if you just spend the time rather than just look at it one time and spend the time and go over it, it makes a lot of sense. It's a good.
Well, we're currently testing 33 nutrients. We're always looking to see what else people find important in terms of, you know, like what people think are important nutrients. You know, in the time that I've been here, we developed tests for copper and chromium. We tried really hard to find one for iodine, but it doesn't really work for functional testing. But again, you know, we're interested in maybe developing one for resveratrol as an antioxidant, because that's, you know, that's something people are finding may be very important.
Mm-hmm. What about alpha-lipoic acid? You test that. What does
mm-hmm.
that do for you? And is it important with N-acetylcysteine?
Alpha-lipoic acid is a fascinating one. Its big role, one of its major roles is it sort of leans into some of the talk about anti-aging, but it specifically protects one of its roles is to protect your mitochondria from mutation. Now, your mitochondria are these little sort of small organelles in your cells, and they are basically the factories for energy. And as they get damaged, they don't really replace very well as people get older. And your mitochondria's output kind of slowly diminish. And if you've ever watched a 2-year-old run around, you'll see very clearly that we have very different energy levels.
That's responsible for? Well, things?
So one of the important roles of alpha-lipoic acid is protecting your energy levels as you get older, which I find just fascinating. There was a really good study done, it would have been 5 or 6 years ago, where essentially they put mice on high levels of, creatine and lipoic acid. And essentially these mice, if you measured their sort of output on, what are those called? Those little sort of hamster wheels, and they had them run mazes. And they found that their cognitive decline both their endurance in terms of energy endurance on a urine treadmill and running races, but both their memory, both their cognitive function and their endurance was much, much higher than mice that weren't supplemented with alpha lipoic acid.
Interesting.
Which is very, very telling. Your brain uses a lot of energy and so do your muscles. So protecting your ability to produce energy turns out it's very, very important in aging well.
One thing that interests me, I have a friend that's a physicist.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very interested in spirit consciousness, if you know what I mean by that word, the
mm-hmm,
science
sure.
of consciousness. And he and some other people think that magnesium may be the chi of life. Do you have any comment on that? Maybe
well,
responsible for the chi of life. You know, the, I don't know, firing deep
mm-hmm.
down in the cell, burning.
Yeah, well, your neurons require magnesium gradients, magnesium potassium gradients to fire. So for you to have a single thought, for you to have a reflex action, you need to have proper neural function, to have a proper electrical firing of your nerves. Magnesium is absolutely necessary, right? Which makes you wonder, given the fact that again about a quarter of the people we test have deficiencies in it.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's no surprise that people are not functioning as well as they possibly could. Again, a lot of people, just like you, they're taking lots of supplements, right? They're trying to live as healthy and as aware lives as they possibly can, but you really never know until you check.
Absolutely. I have to admit that was one of the best things that ever happened to me, because I would never have guessed, never,
mm-hmm.
on some of these things. All right, you got about, 2 minutes. What do you want to say to us? Where to find you again and any closing information?
Sure. Well, first off, I'd just like to really thank you for inviting us at SpectraCell on to talk about who we are and what we're doing. If any of your listeners have any interest in getting more information, we've got patient information and how to find a doctor and all of that on our webpage at www.spectracell.com. That's SPECTRACELL, we're always excited. There's a lot of information out there. We're always excited to be adding that to people and helping people live better and healthier lives.
People can actually go to any lab test, right, and get this test done.
Mm-hmm.
That's the
sure,
name of
sure,
the company
sure.
that's here. Any lab test. I don't know if it's. I don't think it's anylabtest.com, but if you Google any lab test. You can go there and get SpectraCell done because it's specific. You have to do it a special way, right?
Right. I mean,
process it, ship it.
Right. We work with living cells, so there's a really very narrow time window. You know, if someone gets their blood drawn, it has to get to us very, very, very quickly. Like we can only do it within about a day or two of the draw. So it all has to be done overnight, and it has to be done very quickly. So we're open. We are open 7 days a week. 12 months a year. We not a lot of holidays going on in our laboratory because samples come from all over and they have to get processed as soon as they get in. So that makes us a little bit different from a lot of different laboratories.
Thank you, Dr. Stein, for coming on. I really appreciate it. It's wonderful information. And I'll talk to one of you, whichever one's on next week, about the next test. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. It was a real treat.
And good night.
Good night.
Hi, this is Elliot Dasher, author of Integral Health.
Integral Health. Integral Health.
You can hear me and others speaking about consciousness and health.
Consciousness and health.
Consciousness and health. Just tune in every Sunday evening at 7 p.m.
7 p.m.
to Infinite Consciousness with Eva Herr.